Blog Talk Radio.
Voice of Volusia County, AM 1230 and AM 1490. Well, we're focusing on Stetson University. With us right now is Chris Ferguson. Good morning, Chris. How are you doing this Monday morning?
Very good. It's great to be on this morning.
Well, it's a lovely day. It's a little windy over here in New Smyrna Beach. What's it like on the campus?
Well, actually, I'm down in Castleberry still for the moment. I haven't even driven up yet. It's beautiful here in Castleberry.
Well, that's good. Now, you're professor and chair of the philosophy department, right?
Psychology, actually, yeah.
Oh, okay, psychology. Oops, I got to get my bifocals fixed here. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Stetson University.
Sure, yeah. I'm one of the psychology professors here at Stetson University, and I teach courses related to forensic psychology and sometimes abnormal psychology, but also the effects of media on behavior. And research-wise, I do a lot of research on video games and the potential impact of video games on people's behavior, which has been a topic that's been in the news for a couple of decades now.
Right.
But debates about that are still going on.
Ever since, what, Dragons and Dungeons and stuff like that, we've always talked about this and said, is this good for our children? Is this bad for for our children? Is it going to hurt them in the future? Tell us what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, really going back to the early 1980s when video games started to become really popular and we had consoles like the Atari 2600 where kids could play in the home, there have been a lot of debates about, you know, how good these games were for kids or if there were costs in terms of the games promoting aggression or violent behavior or becoming addictive. There's also been talk about whether these games actually make people more intelligent. So there really are debates about both positive and negative effects of these games. Overall, you know, we've done a lot of different studies, you know, at Stetson, you know, with teenagers and college students and, you know, various groups of people. And in some cases, we bring people into the lab and have them play different games and see how that influences their behavior. We've also followed kids over time, you know, to see if they're playing at one time point predicts their behavior at a second time point. And generally speaking, we actually, you know, our results suggest that the impact of video games on teens or kids' behavior, for the most part, is actually pretty minimal. So we don't see the evidence that video games have any kind of dramatic impact on people the way that perhaps, you know, parents and some older people had been concerned about.
Well, you know, we talk about it, like we don't get the kids out and exercise, that's because of the video games. That has really nothing to do with the violence, that has something to do with what's going on with it. But as you talk, I've been thinking, back in the 1970s, when I first graduated from college, and I started a small ad agency that represented banks. And remember the movie Bonnie and Clyde? There was a study done at that time that after the movie Bonnie and Clyde aired, bank robberies across the country went up. And, you know, this is almost the same thing. They're saying, okay, because it's a game, it could be violent, but what's violent for you, it might not be violent for somebody else, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing sometimes you find about these different studies is they can be what's called an ecological fallacy. It's kind of a technical term that means sometimes you can find correlations between two events in society, but they don't really mean anything. And so, like the example with Bonnie and Clyde, I'm actually not familiar with that particular study, but one of the things you can find is that people will sift around for these types of links, and whenever they don't find them, nobody reports that in the news. But whenever the thing happens to be a link, then that does get reported. So
okay. You
could look for like a bunch of different movies that have to do with bank robbery, like get into like the Ocean 11 and that kind of stuff, and find nothing. But the one movie that does come out that happens to coincide with a rise, that's the one that gets reported in news media. So sometimes you have to be a little bit wary of those types of data points. But you're absolutely correct about, you know, the idea of, you know, what's violent for one person may be very different from another one. And that really kind of, you know, comes to the point of, you know, when we talk about violent video games, we kind of treat that as if all games fit within that category in a meaningful way. And the way that violent video game is really defined by scholars in the field, it really includes games from Pac-Man all the way up to Grand Theft Auto. I think we also have to be aware that when we talk about this idea of violent video games, we're really lumping a lot of games in together with each other. And it would kind of like be taking like the Bible and, you know, Stephen King and Harry Potter and, you know, the Grapes of Wrath and throwing them all in together as violent literature and thinking of that as being a coherent whole. But I think if we think of it that way, we can see that even the concept of violent video game, you know, in some ways doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Okay, now you brought up a subject that's near and dear to my heart. Pac-Man. That can't be a violent game. That was my favorite. And Ms. Pac-Man. Remember that one?
Yes, I do. Yes, they were great games.
Well, Chris, I got to ask you, the newspaper in the United Kingdom once claimed that games are addicted like heroin is to drug addicts. Is there any truth behind that?
Well, that obviously is quite sensationalized. So, I mean, video games are certainly not addictive in the same way that heroin or cocaine or other types of substances are addictive. There is a lot of talk about the idea of video game addiction or what is actually officially being now called internet gaming disorder. And there's probably a little kernel of truth to it in the sense that you probably find somewhere around 1% or less of gamers who start to develop behaviors that are problematic for them. So some people may have difficulty disengaging from video games and going to work or doing their schoolwork or spending time with their family and such. So they're having a little bit of difficulty regulating the amount of time they play video games. But this is a fairly uncommon, you know, set of problems, even for people who are gamers. And it's still not the same thing as heroin addiction, where you develop a tolerance and you develop withdrawal symptoms that are actually quite severe when you try to discontinue, you know, that type of behavior. So, I mean, what you really come down to is that a lot of things that are fun can become addictive for people that have difficulty regulating their behavior, whether that's video games or sex or food or exercise in some cases. And you can even find people that get addicted to work, God forbid. There's nothing special about video games in this sense, but you certainly can find a small number of people that have difficulty regulating their behaviors. And what it really comes down to is they have difficulty stopping a fun behavior to start a less fun behavior that they have to do.
Well, Chris, it's even moved on from that. Now we've got Facebook and tweeting and all that. So it looks like this industry is just moving on. I know it's not the games, but it's moving on. Chris, it's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning.
It's been great to be on.